First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego chicken sandwich, Fuego fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Oh, what are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. What is my screen doing? Oh, there we go. For some reason, it didn't make the video disappear that I used for the intro when we're streaming and doing this live. But
love it.
Weird stuff. Who knows? Maybe we'll have other technical difficulties. Hopefully not. But hey, I'm Tom. This is Lotus. And Lotus, I've been noticing as we've been going through these creation myths of all these different cultures that there has been discussion. In fact, I was inspired for today's episode by a conversation that happened on our Discord where people were talking about basically the question of, like, with all of these different creation myths, how do you know which one is right? And I looked at that question and I went, that question assumes things.
That's a loaded question.
That seems like a loaded question. Because not that that person was wrong to ask that, but oftentimes that is the kind of question people ask when presented with these dilemmas, but they don't realize that they're assuming that one of them is right and the others aren't. But that also means that there could be other ways to formulate this, which I'm going to get into in this episode. So I've written, Lotus, this is going to be fun. I've written this thesis.
I felt like I was back in philosophy class when I was reading through your notes. You sent them to me earlier and we're like, oh, so I posed this based on the questions. Rest. I was like, oh, this sounds like a great idea. And I'm reading through it. I was like, this is a textbook. Excellent. All right.
Yeah, right.
I haven't been to philosophy class in a while. So let's do this.
Yeah. So this episode is going to be a little bit different. We're not actually pulling up documents from other sources or anything like that. We're going through basically a thesis that I have created that explains how to handle lore contradictions and the different ways we could approach it and why there genuinely isn't a definitive, this is the answer to this. In fact, all of these are possible for their own ways, and we're going to go through each of them. So to give you kind of a glimpse of where we're going with this, there are five different ways to handle lore contradictions. And we're talking about the kinds of contradictions you get in creation stories. Like, some of them mention Anu and some of them mention a different being under a different name. Is it the same thing? Is it different? Is one of them right? Is one of them wrong? Are they both right? Are they both wrong? So here's just kind of a quick little overview, but then we're going to get into the details. Either one version is accurate and all the others are false. This is usually people's starting point. Another solution to this dilemma is something like one or more of them have elements of the truth, or they're all actually a little bit accurate in the ways that they overlap and they're incorrect in the ways that they don't. That would be another solution. Another version of this is that they contain some form of truth. We'll call it a human truth, but not an existential capital T truth, meaning that they point more towards what's going on with human beings and their view of themselves, how they interact with the world, the things that they want, the things that they fear, the things that they hope for, and less about the actual nature of existential existence and reality. So existential existence is a little redundant, but I think you get the idea.
It's a lot of EXs.
Yeah. Yeah. So
existence.
And my lights have just changed again on their own. Here, we're going to fumble through these.
Intense. It's,
there we go.
Speaking of existence, it looks like you just burst into existence with that bright light.
Pew, pew. Okay. So another option would be that they're all wrong and completely fiction, even in regards to the nature of human truths.
This is actually really funny to me because I just love the absolutely incorrect theory. Where it's just like, yeah, this is all total bunk.
They
like,
all could just
none
be
of this is real.
Right. They could all just be totally made up crap. For that, people have just been passing down and passing down and passing down, assuming that the people who came before them knew what they were talking about, right?
Right. That's just always such a funny thing. It's like, nope, not based in anything, because it's just like wacky to think that that's, I mean, it is a possibility. It's just funny, though.
Yeah, yeah. And then the fifth version is that they're all actually true, even though they contradict in some way that they're all actually true, which sounds crazy, but in the real world, there's subjective metaphysical philosophical systems that try to explain how this could be possible. But then there's also things that happen in the lore, things that happen in the games that seem to allow for beings that would be contradictory both to exist.
Right.
And that gets weird.
Yes. And I mean, as is, like, you know, we have this fictional setting where it's like they can overtly do that if they want to.
Right.
So it can even be a little more cut and dry in that regard, even in terms of trying to, we have logical contradictions that happen in the real world, but they can overtly just happen in game. And that's how, you know, we came across this thing that I find to be a fascinating part of the lore, but like that's where the birth of Dragon Breaks came from, because they had to come up with a way to make the contradictions of you choosing one of a plethora of endings at the end of Daggerfall, but how do you make the player's choice still matter in the next game and have a canon way to carry on the series?
Right, right. So the game the game has within itself the ability for subjective truth to occur and then somehow become objective truth also later on.
Exactly.
Because of the Dragon Breaks. So that is a little bit weird. I'm not sure
so
our reality.
Bend your brain a little bit with this.
Right, right. So before we get into the specifics for each of these, I just want to put it out there that this is not an exhaustive list, meaning that this isn't every possibility. This isn't each one of these. I'm going to have some descriptions about ways that they work or don't work or things that you have to be careful of if you go down that path. But again, it's not exhaustive. So I know YouTube likes to do this. If you're the kind of person who's going to go, well, actually, you didn't bring up this. You're right. So go ahead and post that. Let me know.
Probably didn't.
I might have thought of it.
Hear about it.
But I didn't put it on thing, and I may not have thought about it, and that would be great. So add to the discussion. Thanks. So here, let's get into the details. Number one, we're going back to number one. One version of the story is accurate, and all the others are false. That's probably the easiest to handle. It's the way most people in our reality handle their own religious views. For example, if you are, let's say, a Taoist, you believe that the world works a certain way according to the traditions that you've learned growing up, the books that you've read, the worship services you've gone to, your spiritual leaders in your community. If you're a Christian or a Muslim, that's generally your perspective on the world. As my version is accurate, everybody else, not so much. But that doesn't mean that people have those who have those beliefs that theirs is accurate don't also believe that they can't be truth found in other systems. But in general, this is one way of viewing things. Oftentimes people think the way I see the world is correct. Everything else is not.
Is either incorrect or, you know, not as correct.
Not as correct. Mistaken. Yeah,
It's not even necessarily like a, you know, you have to be wrong, but it's just like, well, no, you're not quite as correct as I.
Right. And there's a whole spectrum. There are people who are just like, no, my view is absolutely correct. Everyone else is absolutely wrong. And there are people who then go into the second one and go, oh, well, truths can be found everywhere. Right. That's a sliding scale. So here, let's go through each of the points. Point number one, this is how many people in our world view it. Like I said before, there are problems with this view, though. It carries with it a lot of assumptions. Assumption number one. The existence of a deeper metaphysical truth. So let's just put this out there. This assumes that a deeper capital T truth actually exists.
which is something hard to nail down with this series.
Yeah, it's hard to nail down with. Like, is there actually a deeper truth? I think most of us have a kind of a gut instinct that there is, but do we actually have evidence for that? Some people would say it seems like we do. Some people, when they look a little bit deeper, go, maybe we don't. Maybe these are all just stories, and maybe things are just chaotic, and this is just, maybe I'm a character in the Matrix, and the deeper metaphysical truth is nothing like any of the things that we've learned, but there is one out there. Or maybe I'm just a temporary being, and that's all there is, and once I'm gone, I'm gone. Maybe I am the Godhead. Or maybe I have no explanation for this at all, and a deeper objective metaphysical truth doesn't even exist at all.
That could be possible. One of the things that I really like about this whole thing is when I think about this, that I find interesting is because I feel there are so many, for lack of a word, creators of the world, mm-hmm. between the players, like you playing the game, you are making your own truth of your story. Right. And then from just a lore perspective, if you're not looking at like just you playing, it's, you know, less in theory, but or in game theory, but a little more pulled back into like the game development thing of, we don't have the same writers and lore masters of the series from game to game. It's evolved as well. And I think that it's interesting because each of them brings their own truths, quote unquote, to the world, which I love kind of changes the direction that like Leman Tuttle is going to take the series in a different direction when he was the lore master compared to when Michael Kirkbride was writing. You know what I mean? And it's like Todd Howard's, as the director, has things steering in a certain direction, as opposed to Julien Lefebvre, I believe it was his name, way, way back, the original. Different directions from the people crafting the world is an interesting way of making it so that it's like, well, that really adds that grayness factor to the black and white theory, where it's like, well, just because it might have been going in a direction that was a little more black and white, maybe that person has moved on from the game series and now somebody took it in a different direction. Now that thing that was designed to be true is no longer true.
Right. So, and each of them brings their own lens, their own experience, their own intentions. They're all different creators. And in our own reality, like this kind of, clearly we don't have authors of our, as far as we know, authors of our own reality, but it still can apply, right? This idea that like, well, maybe one truth is there, but the others are false, but it makes things weird. There are other assumptions that go along with this too. So existence of a deeper metaphysical truth is assumed. There's only one right way is an assumption. There might be multiple right ways to interpret things. Number three, everyone who holds your beliefs shares exactly the same beliefs. But that's not necessarily true. I mean, here in the United States, lots of people are different types of Christians. They go to church services. And I would challenge any one of them to sit down on a pew and ask the people next to them about their theological beliefs. And I bet that you would have a very hard time to get any group of people to all 100% agree to exactly the same thing. So you don't even have to look outside of your own specific beliefs. You can look among your own congregations, and it's very hard to nail down anybody who has 100% the same exact perspective. And if that's the case, and there's only one right way, then which individual actually knows that one right way? It becomes very difficult to pin that down. But the same thing happens in Tamriel, in the games. You talk to a Nord in one place and they have certain assumptions about the way things work. And you talk to another Nord in Skyrim in another place and they will have a different view of the same lore, even though they're both Nords. So the same thing happens there. There's other assumptions. I'm trying to get through this as fast as we can because we've got a lot to get to. Of all world theologies, one of them is 100% right. That's another assumption. One of these, it's another way to phrase the only one is right, but of all of them, one is 100% right, which means the others have to be 100% false. Another assumption, you choose your perspective based on reason and solely through a pursuit of truth. You don't do that. We don't decide the things that we believe in because we are a computer that only does rational computation and has looked at all the evidence and has come up with it, right? That's not how humans work. your emotions, your ideas that you were given at a young age, the way you were brought up, your hopes, your fears, all of this plays a part of your perspective and which of these one systems that you are going to choose to believe in apart from the others. Not necessarily the one with the most evidence. In fact, very few people choose what they believe based on evidence. And yet we pretend like that's the way we interact with these things. In fact, we do this with the game lore too. Oftentimes people will pick, well, I really like the elven view of these things. Is that based on evidence or is that just that's the one you think is the coolest? Usually it's the second, right?
Yeah, no, you usually go with, unless you're doing like a role play thing for it, it would generally tend to be, or at least, you know what, from my perspective, I go with a little more of a, this is the coolest or this is the most efficient, as I'm known for being a little min-maxy type of thing, yeah. Where it's like, okay, this is what I choose because this is the most efficient. Like, I want to be an Argonian because I want to be able to swim underwater and then not have to worry about breathing.
Sure, like, right. Or so maybe I like the Argonian myth better because the Hists are really weird and cool and I want that to be true.
Exactly. I want to be part of this giant, well, tree hive mind thing.
Right. So just two more assumptions, that you've studied any or and all beliefs in complete detail. So you have the evidence to even make this claim. Chances are you don't, whether that has to do with game lore or real world myths and, and religions.
That's a monumental task.
Right. And, who has studied everything about everything in order to say like, oh, well, now that I have all of this evidence, I can make the most rational decision.
Right.
Almost none of us.
Yeah. We base it on as much knowledge as we have.
Right. Which usually means that it's more about the thing that we grew up with and way less about any other option, which is why you never change options, is because they're not the one you grew up with that you're familiar with. So,
yeah.
And then number seven, that we somehow have the tools to even judge this. We're assuming if you pick one and say the others are all false, then you're also assuming that you actually have tools that are effective enough to judge what that is. Chances are, even if you're an extremely rational person who's been very educated, you may not even actually have the tools to be definitively sure.
For sure.
So that perspective has a bunch of assumptions that are tied with it. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It just means you need to be aware of those assumptions in order to then continue with that belief. Option number two.
Logical shortcomings.
Right. Yeah. So option number two, one or more have elements of truth and or the other perspective on this would be that everything's a little bit accurate in specific ways, which is another very commonly held thing. In fact, like I mentioned, some people who are highly religious with one perspective will then say, well, but, you know, I can see elements of truth in other systems as well.
Yeah,
that's pretty common. This has its problems.
That's also the easiest to kind of digest because it's like it gives you the idea of that, well, if there is overlap between these, there's got to be overlap for a reason.
And many
would assume that if there is overlap for a reason, that's probably that reason is because it's real.
Right. Yeah. And again, this comes with assumptions. So it again starts with existence of a deeper metaphysical truth. It assumes that there is some sort of truth that everything's pointing to. Most of us would agree with that. That's the way the world feels like it works, but it doesn't mean that it definitely does. Assumption number two, it's the similarities point to this one objective capital T truth. But like you were saying, they could match for many different reasons. What if it's just a coincidence? What if there's just coincidences where the stories overlap, but those things are actually false? Or what if you just pick the ones that you like the most? Because human beings often will make decisions based on emotions, based on their biggest wants and their biggest fears. And so therefore you're going to justify that these things seem true because you want them to be.
Yes. And that's also a huge one that is very difficult for many to get over this hurdle of assuming there's something more there, because coincidence, especially when you deal with like statistical analysis and stuff like that, and you see, you know, coincidences or correlations a lot of times, there's a big difference between a correlation and a causation, which can really trip people up, where you can see things like, oh, well, this happens like every time that this other thing happens, but then it turns out you haven't done enough studies and it's really just this small percentage had this correlation where they were both happening, but it was just sort of chance that they were happening, because if something happens 90% of the time one way and you happen to be, I mean, it's a statistical anomaly, but, and you only see the 10% that happened that one time, well, okay, you see 100% of this thing happening.
Right.
But
right.
in the grand scheme of things, it's actually an outlier,
right.
which can be very hard to accept when that's your only rational view of what you've seen.
Right. So it's just right. like, well, I got in a car accident.
Just chance.
Yeah. I get in a car accident and for some reason I come out of it 100% unscathed. But most right. people in that same kind of car accident would have died.
Right.
Oftentimes people make assumptions. Oh, God wanted me to live. Or God saved me or something like that.
Sure.
But statistically speaking, if you were to run that same crash 1,000 times, some small percentage of them would leave somebody unscathed.
Because somebody, yes.
Because of the nature of the seatbelt and where the cars were when they impacted, the speeds they were going, any of those things.
A whole bunch of weird, right. you know, factors that can be very, 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 very hard to narrow down. Right. And it's like, you know, if you give this same, we'll use this accident, for example, in this scenario, we run this accident 1,000 times on a test dummy. And like, that's why they do these testings, because it's like, you yeah. want to get a percentage that it's like, well, there's a really good percent chance you're going to survive if you do this.
Right. Right.
But that percentage is unlikely to be 100%. So that means this some amount is going to be survival rates or not, like
yeah.
and when you are part of that small percentage, that's what you see, so you think that that is like what connects you to the scenario,
and which, you have to come up with a justification. Right. Human beings,
which
will
can be very hard to break out of.
Yeah, we look for the why. Well, why was right. it? It can't just be random chance. Well, no, it can be random chance. So you roll a yeah. die, you take one six-sided die and you roll it 100 times and it's going to roll a six within a certain range. That's random chance.
Like, right.
That's just the and nature that, of it.
Yeah, and it's like, it can be kind of wild. I oftentimes, not so much on this show because we don't delve too much into the gameplay mechanics of stuff, mm-hmm. but like on Tales of Tamriel, I joke all the time that my RNG is, I like most people, I think is pretty just like RNG being random number generator, which is just a term for random chance in loot drops yeah. oftentimes with video games. And I find, you know, most people thought, oh, I have terrible RNG or I have great RNG. And it's, again, because you focus on being good at something or bad at something.
That's right. Because you emotionally resonated with something more than something else.
One of the others.
And so you feel most that was, way. Oftentimes, if right. you look at the stats, though, it's probably not true.
Right. And I always joke that I'm sure that my RNG is pretty standard, mm-hmm. but mine tends to be very streaky. I'll be super lucky and then super unlucky and which, then super.
Which is an and, element of randomness.
Right.
Randomness can funny. Be clumpy. That's the yeah, way that
it can
it
be.
Works.
And yeah. that's just, I find that more often than not, it seems that mine is very clumpy. That's why usually when I'm having yeah. bad luck with something, I'm like, time to check out. It's probably not going to go well for a while. And it might, I could have just bailed one time before it was good again.
You could have.
But I just tend to notice that it goes in clumps. And it's just like, but right. in the grand scheme of things, it's like, well, yeah, that doesn't mean I have good or bad RNG. It's just, mine seems to resonate with me. It's like, no, I seem to get on streaks of things, but just randomly. So it can be weird.
Yeah, the whole human experience colors everything. We don't come at data in a non-emotional way almost ever. We
right.
We always are connected to some emotional view of it, which skews our
I mean,
opinion.
even the example I literally just gave wouldn't apply 100% of the time.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I seem to notice when that's the case, but maybe it's because I don't notice when it's not the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's get back to this. We've got yeah. Other assumptions. So we're breaking down the similarities that point to the truth, but they could match for other reasons, right? Coincidence, appeal, which is kind of what we were discussing there. The third one for that is a truth about humans rather than metaphysics. Maybe the reason why these systems coincide is because human beings wrote the story, and those are the things that human beings care about the most. Or in the case of Tamriel, people wrote the stories, yes. and people tend to want and care about certain things. And so when those details overlap, they have more to do with simply revealing the nature of human beings than anything greater than that. That could be the case as well. The next one is similar source material, which may or may not be true. So why do a lot of these stories overlap? Well, maybe they came from some original story that was lost a long time ago, and variations of that story broke apart and went to different cultures and then got mixed in with those cultures. And through the game of telephone, through just sharing stories over years and years and years and years, they went through the cultural filter and they came out on different sides. But that doesn't even necessarily mean that if even though they came from some deeper original source, that the original source was even true. It could have just been a fairy tale that somebody made up. And because it's so old, everyone just assumes it's some sort of deeper knowledge or deeper truth.
And that
it may not be.
That concept of a game of telephone is very funny because that's how so many things you start with one thing, one truth, let's just say, and it gets interpreted so many times. You get this weird variant that you just like a little bit, everybody just say whether it's intentional or not, as one little thing, a little flavor to it, a little flair, something like that to make it theirs. Mm-hmm. But then when you keep having that be the basis for what's then being modified a little bit, it can get so far off depending upon how many iterations you get of it. The it's Simpsons like, joke of, it's a super weird one, but like there's a Simpsons joke where the teachers are on strike. This is back from 20 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, 90 and, Simpsons.
Yeah, and they go across and the teachers are on strike and the, you know, Bart tries to egg them on and he goes, the teachers are going to crack any minute now. And it goes down the line and it gets to the front of the thing and they're like, Skinner says the teachers are going to crack any minute now, purple monkey dishwasher. And they're like, oh my God, I'm especially going to go at him for that purple monkey dishwasher remark. And that had nothing to do with anything that was originally said. And that's what they stuck on.
So yeah, that could very well be the case. And it could be that case in game lore as well. Right. There are some other assumptions that my religious experience and your religious experience, when described with similar words based on different systems, are exactly the same. So just because you have similar words and those words match up from different descriptions of lore or creation stories, that those things mean exactly the same thing. But just because they're similar doesn't mean they're identical. It's another assumption, right? Number four, that when presented with ideas and concepts that we have the tools with which to vet them. We don't. Again, this goes back to the idea that like we're assuming that our logic and reason and our human emotions and our ability to make judgments of these things is adequate to approach objective reality, like the deeper truth of reality. And we may just not be able to understand it at all.
Right. That could and be a they thing. Actually make reference sometimes to that in the series where like some objective truths seem to be alluded to as being known by some of the greater beings. And it's just like, oh, well, you just wouldn't understand it. Like a lot of Daedric stuff is just like, oh, well, you know, this doesn't make sense to you, mortal, because you can't understand it.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just like, it's literally supposedly outside the comprehension of, in this situation, the character that you're playing.
Right.
And so a lot of like, real world. You can't understand it.
Yeah. A lot of real world faiths take this to heart. They go, well, this is the best we can do, but we can't expect to understand everything. Which is fair. You know, I think of it this way. Our meat brains were designed to work with meat worlds.
Start messing with weird physics, you can.
Yeah.
One of the things I.
Yeah.
If you ever
want to look at
quantum mechanics, if one of my favorite elements to not touch or eat, but you want to look at weird things, is watch what people do with mercury.
Oh, God.
It is a ridiculous element that.
It's poison.
Like, it's just, it doesn't make sense when you watch what people can do with it. It's so weird.
Yeah, but don't touch it because it's poison.
No, don't touch it and don't drink it.
All right. So one more thing about this, there's a little bit of accuracy and truth among all these different systems concept is that either this was intentionally created to be this way by some higher power. So like, think of it from the top down, some creator being, whether that's Anu or whoever, designed the world so that there would be all these variations where some of them carry truth and some of them don't. But why would you do that? Or it was just randomly how things worked out over time.
Right.
So let's go into the details. So point number one for that one, why would a divine being purposely confuse their creation? What would be the point of that? And some people would say
the value in something like that.
Yeah, to preserve the mystery and make you want to discover it. Okay, sure.
Maybe.
Two, why wouldn't a divine being fight against the confusion of truth and make things easier for its creation to understand? If there's a divine being that wants you to understand the way things are, then wouldn't it design creation in a way that it was easier to do that rather than have to piece things together across multiple stories? That seems kind of complex for no reason.
It does. And then you get into the weird situations of, well, is that type of thing designed as a test? Like, is the search for it
right?
The
Or does the truth need to be hidden?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, is there a reason that's like you're supposed to want to work for it to find the truth or whatever? And it's like, if I tell you something and you don't believe me, well, you didn't have faith in this Daedra, whatever the situation may be. So it's like, well, you failed the test because you doubted me or whatever. And it's like, that could be. So there's the idea of like, okay, well, is there a test to it? But it seems like if you want them to understand, it's
right.
Logical that you would want to make it so they could.
Right. But then if, you know, in the case of Elder Scrolls, do any of these creator beings, whether they're Anu or Akatosh or Tall Papa or whoever, have any of them said that they want to make it understandable to mortals? Right. I don't know that any of them have even said that.
I was going to say, very rarely do you even get benevolent interactions overall with some of these divine beings.
Right.
It's like...
Right.
Even the ones that are known for being quote unquote good, as long as things are going their way, I mean,
yeah, they explain a little bit.
Entire race because she was slighted.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
and she's one of the good Daedra. It's like good comes with some heavy quotation marks in this series.
Right, the end of Oblivion, the avatar of Akatosh shows up to push back Mehrunes Dagon.
Right.
But it doesn't take a moment to say like, oh, by the way, here's where your theology has gone sideways and you probably need to readjust which of these divines are actually even here anymore doing anything. You know, like, no point does that avatar actually bring clarity to the religious experience other than, like, hey, I'm a dragon and I'm here to fight a monster.
Yeah, like, oh, this isn't what I want right now, so we're going to oust you and okay, see you later.
Right, yeah. So, but why? If they're there to save everybody, then why not bring clarity to the situation? They don't. So both of these features, either that things were purposely confused or that why wouldn't a divine being bring truth and understanding, are usually answered by the fact that, like you said, we're just not meant to understand them, which is extremely an unsatisfying answer.
It
but is. That doesn't mean it's more or less true. It just doesn't feel great.
Right. And one interesting aspect that is in divine creatures in the Elder Scrolls is, although you have so many like divine beings between Aedra and Daedra and all this stuff, they're much more fallible in these religions. Like, right. It's yes. Not like even as good as or strong, quote unquote, again, because there's different types of strength as they are, they team up to each other. If one's getting out of line, I mean, Jigalag got put in check because it was like, ooh, he's starting to overstep his strength levels. Like, we don't like this so much. And Hermaeus Mora seems to be at the butt of many things. Like, yeah, I don't really like how you seem to be getting on with things. We're going to just use my manipulation to kind of control a situation. And right. Dagon's invading things, but he's, you know, knocked out by other ones and all these different things where it's just like, there isn't really one to rule them all. They're all kind of very strong fighting against each other. And the power level is in check with each other,
right?
To two degrees.
Yeah, and if you wanted to go up the pantheon, according to the way we understand it, say, from the elves, you'd have to go up to Anu and Padme. But Anu and Padme don't seem to be like... If they've birthed a lot of children, and those children are now in daycare, we'll call it Mundus, they just went away somewhere. They've and some of the lore stories explain where they've gone and what they've done. But that is that the actual case? Is that there are really no adults in the room anymore? Maybe.
Right.
You know, like, maybe that's the case. But then again, if you were an all-powerful creator being, then why would you do that? That doesn't seem like a good decision, right? So that's, so what, how does that contradiction work, right? All right, so let's go, we got to keep going. Number three, this is the number three option. So we have one truth and everything else is false, or there's a little bit of truth in everything, or that they don't necessarily contain some sort of objective metaphysical truth, but they contain what I would call human truths or people truths. Basically, the reasons why the stories are told are not necessarily to extrapolate into the beyond, into the past, but really tell us more about ourselves, which is another traditional way to look at myths and religious perspectives. But let's get into it. So first point. The stories might have to do with revealing truths about human nature. That's basically what I just said. They actually point inward rather than outward. Second point, they were created or at least written down by humans in our world or peoples, elves, you know, mer, men, beast races, those kinds of things.
Yeah. Some of the folk.
Mortals. We'll just say mortals. Therefore limited by the same features that limit all mortals. One, fallibility. Mortals can misunderstand things. They can incorrectly write them down. They can pass them down from person to person and change the words like we discussed, right? So you got that element. Two, mortals are limited. Their knowledge, their understanding, their ability to handle even making that an important enough thing to actually focus on and get down to the core details. Three, mortals are self-interested. They shape, shaping stories of God's faith, creation, and purpose is a powerful temptation. So if I realize that by the way I pass this story down, either through words or through writing, that I can change some little details in order to make me or my people's situation seem better, then that's a very hard temptation to fight against. Like when we were going through the elven version of the creation myth, right? And they put themselves at the top and everyone else sucks. And then the imperial version, and they're like, yeah, well, we're pretty good, but the elves suck. You know, like, yes. Is that truth? Or is that just the mortal temptation to bend that story to their advantage?
And one thing that I actually feel might be worth kind of noting, even outside the mortal perspective, even dipping a little bit into the immortal quote-unquote perspective, when you're dealing with Daedra, so like Dremora or something like that, we know that when they die, they are actually just kind of like destroyed their physical form, and then they go back to, you know, the Caeta Creatia, they get squished all back together, and it takes them a really long time.
Turn into a tadpole thing, and then they grow
exactly,
back up.
Exactly, and then they mix up all the goop, and then they come back from the Azure Plasm stuff. Like, gross.
Right.
But pulling all the way back, they've kind of... ESO has re-talked about it a little bit with the Deadlands DLC, where they dip more into that whole thing. But dipping way back into like Battlespire area lore and stuff like that, there's a situation where, you know, we see writings from Daedra and stuff like that regularly in the series. But the reason I bring this up is, with the way things are shaped, when they die, it's supposedly extremely horrific to be reborn, essentially.
Yeah, right.
And it's alluded to that they lose a touch of their sanity every time something like that happens. That's going to influence how you view things.
Right. Yeah.
It overtly does in the game with how people react. So if this happens over millennia of them getting killed and coming back and all this stuff, there's some in Battlespire that don't handle it super well. It's super 90s tastic, but it's like they start struggling with like some of them are like hyper depressed because they just like have nothing but trauma that they can remember. So it's like that's going to change their view of things, and any stories they tell are going to be strongly influenced by that. And then if they have followers, that's going to bleed into that, and now you have this whole new thing born of something really unrelated to anything that actually probably should have a strong influence.
Also, and we talk about this all the time, Tamriel is a very difficult, terrible place to live. The stakes are dire. There are things around every corner that want to murder you.
Right.
Everybody's vying for power. Magic is real. The world is dangerous. And so if
it's
you
a
can...
miserable place.
Right. So if you're going to survive, you need to leverage everything to your own survival and to be able to thrive. So why not change the stories in ways that make it better for you and your people to be able to survive? That seems like an obvious temptation. And on top of it, if you take the same stories and you go generation after generation after generation, even if one generation is strong enough to avoid that temptation, doesn't mean the next one is, or the next one, or the next one, or the next one, and so on. The chain is only as strong as its weakest link, which means as soon as one person in that link changes the story is no longer accurate.
Exactly. And a lot of times, even if it's with the best intentions, if somebody's just like, man, this is too bleak, like people are like, this is too dark, like there is no hope here, this story is terrible, I'll just make it sound a little more positive. To your point, that real link is broken to what might actually be the situation. it was done with good intent. Like, oh man, I don't want everybody just thinking this is just hopeless type of deal. I'll make it sound a little more positive. Okay, well, that's great. You gave a positive spin to something, but it's false.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's still not true.
It's still not true, even helpful, if it was done with good.
Yeah, but it's exactly. Not true.
Right. And that's just it. So there's all these aspects that you need to kind of factor as potential.
Yeah. So, okay. So continuing the discussion about these stories contain like mortal truths, human/mortal truths, rather than the truth, capital T. That sounds profound, but when you actually think about it for a minute, it isn't at all. Doesn't everything that any mortal creates come with information about the creator?
Like, I mean, theoretically, if they're made from the creator that made them,
right.
It so, like, physically has to be.
Get ready. Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is almost here. It's Black Friday in July, and it's coming your way. For 5 days only, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Plus amazing doorbuster deals and free shipping on everything. Yes, everything right to your door. So mark your calendars. Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale starts July 24th. Shop everything home at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Everyone has a fave Wendy's frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new frosty swirls and frosty fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo brownie fusion, Pop-Tarts strawberry fusion, strawberry swirl, brownie batter swirl, caramel swirl, and caramel crunch fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co. LLC, used with permission.
Right, so if you were to write a song, then wouldn't that tell me what kind of music you like? If right. You wrote the lyrics of the song, you're probably going to write lyrics around your life experience. So now I have some insight into your life experience. You cannot create things in a vacuum that don't have something to say about you yourself. That's impossible.
Right. Even if it's a weird thing where it's like a misdirection.
Right. That like, still shows me that you're the kind of person who wants to misdirect people.
Exactly. Like, right. There's exactly. Even trying to do things intentionally counteractive to avoid this then shows what exactly. Kind of person you are because you're doing that.
Right. Like, so this idea that like they contain mortal truths is not that profound. It's almost obvious. It's just like, well, yeah, everything anyone creates
shockingly
ever
unprofound, actually.
Contains truth about the nature of being a person who has to deal with person things. Like, that's true. Final point on this one, just because they might contain insight into the human condition, the stories, the myths, doesn't necessarily mean that those insights can't overlap with metaphysical ones. So just because some of the things that overlap talk about deeper mortal truths doesn't mean that they can't also symbolically represent some sort of greater metaphysical truth. Those two things could be true at the same time. And that's fine. Like, maybe it is that way. Again, we don't know. So you've got all of those. Okay, number four. What about this? They're all wrong and completely fiction. All the myths, all the creation stories, all of those things are wrong. To like 100% incorrect. Even in regards to things like mortal truths, like there's actually no deeper mortal truth. There's just maybe some insight into the creator, but no deeper, like combined, you know, this is the way humanity views these things all together, unified sort of truths. Or the human truths they reveal are without any significant value, which kind of extends that idea. This idea that like, okay, maybe the story is because this creator really liked the idea of dragons. And so they incorporated Akatosh as a dragon god, but that doesn't actually say anything about like mortals in general. It was just that creator liked dragons, right? So there's still really no weight there. Let's So let's go into the details on this one. So as stated previously, everything anyone creates reveals some truth about the creator, even mundane information. So it's seemingly impossible that they would contain no human truths, even just coincidentally. Like maybe it is true that all the Nords like dragons just inherently. And so they put a dragon in a story and now it's telling us that, you know what, Nords in general, this greater truth about Nords is they all are inspired by dragons for some reason. Point number two, maybe the things revealed about the creator are so mundane that this basically holds true. So maybe everything is just so mundane and there's really nothing else to point to. And so therefore there is no greater truth to any of these. That could be the case. Then why would there be similarities between the stories becomes the question. Why do some of the details overlap at all? Option number one, coincidence. Maybe there was a coincidental original source. Maybe somebody put down an original source and that source spread and it went through its different versions, like we talked about
before. Very possible.
Right. Very possible. Now, option number two, similarities among people and things they care to write stories about. Now we're back to human truths. So maybe there's just coincidence that people like the same kinds of things. And so maybe that's the only deeper truth. It's a deeper mortal truth, but it's also still not that impressive.
Still not that deep.
Still not that deep. It's just these are the kinds of things people like to write about. Okay. Number three, the limitations of human imagination. So why do all these stories have similarities? Well, maybe nobody came up with anything more creative than that.
Which we joke about on the regular with fiction nowadays, where it's just like everything's kind of just rehashes of other things or remakes of the thing that was already done.
Right. Yeah. Like, why aren't we getting even more crazy, unique, interesting stories? Well, part of it is because it's hard to pitch that stuff and sell it. But also, 100%. But maybe there's just like boundaries to the human imagination.
Yeah, we're limited, and I think that's why sometimes when something is much more unique, it's why when it, to your point, you got to get it actually pitched and then approved and then made, which is in and of itself quite a beast to conquer. But a lot of times I joke, not even the biggest Souls fan, but like some of that stuff is so unique in monster design where it's just like, whoa, this is like weird. Yeah. And I think that's why it stands out and is sort of one of the main reasons it's so popular, because a lot of the art and design is pretty unique compared to a lot of the stuff we see. And it's like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool.
Right. Rather than taking old ideas and just repurposing them.
Yeah.
All right. So the fifth option here is that all of them are true at the same time. This is one that I think a lot of people have a hard time dealing with. I think people are happy to say, okay, one is true and the rest are false, or I see truths between them, or these are all pointing at some sort of deeper, like mortal truth, even if they don't point to the great beyond, or this last one that, well, maybe they're all just kind of fiction anyway, and they don't even have any greater use. All of those seem pretty understandable by most people. The idea that all of these are true 100% at the same time, no editing, meaning like if the elven creation myth talks about Anu and Padme as being the origin of everything, and then the Yakudans talk about Sadakal, right? That both of those things somehow happened at the same time, or both happened, both go by those different names, both function in the ways that they were described, and yet somehow reality still holds together, even though the creation myths seem to contradict each other.
Yep.
But yet, for some reason, they don't. One justification for this is subjective metaphysics, that reality is not actually real out there. It's real here with the individual, and then that reality permeates outward from the individual, which is kind of a weird thing to try to understand.
Yeah, it's a little on the strange side to try to be like, you are the thing that makes something real.
Right. It would almost imply that the individual, the person with consciousness, is the Godhead, and that their experience,
which is alluded
to
in the series,
which is alluded to in the series. It could be true.
There is potential for this.
Yep. But even in our own world, maybe that's the case. Maybe all of you are NPCs and I'm the only real person, and my experience of reality and the things I believe are true. And
can't prove that until you see me T-posing at a conference.
Or maybe only Lotus and I exist, and Lotus's version of reality is true for him, and my version of reality is true for me, and somehow both of those things don't actually even meet with each other or contradict, yet we can still have a conversation.
Right.
Maybe that's the case. Who knows?
It's a little bizarre.
It's weird, but it doesn't mean that it's not possible. A second point here, real philosophers have suggested this possibility. There is a whole realm of 20th century subjective metaphysical, all sorts of writings and stuff. It gets weird and wacky. It's very hard to understand unless you actually kind of learn it in the order that those things were written, and you go down the path of understanding the way they use words, because often they use words differently than most other people use words.
But yeah,
there is entirely a system that wants to say that this might actually be real. In our own world. In the world of Tamriel, it seems like this sometimes is also true. Here, what about this? The experience of the truth is more true than the information or knowledge itself. Basically, the story, the myth, the song, whatever, is a vehicle to get you to the truth, and that truth experience is subjective to each of us, yet no less real. This is similar to what I was talking about before, but it's the idea that it's not so much about the facts of the thing, it's about the pursuit of the facts, and that's what brings about reality to the individual, and so therefore it's subjective. And I know that sounds confusing. Does that make any sense to you, Lotus?
No, for sure. It's weird. Don't get me wrong. It's weird, but it's another, I don't know, I just call it, it's another possibility given the immense amount of nebulous information we're dealing with, where you kind of have to just work with what we have. Mm-hmm. And because we've been arguing against, there is really no way to pinpoint the exacts of stuff. So, I mean, you can't rule something like this out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but there are some problems with it, of course. What, first of all,
as with everything we've brought up so far.
Yeah. So, none of these are perfect. That's the kind of the fun of this, is that none of these are like a grand slam. This is definitely the case in our own reality or in Tamriel. In fact, like everything's a little weird no matter how you look at it. The problems with this one are that subjective truth is fundamentally incompatible with objective rational truth. That means that there's somewhere in that distinction between the two where they both can't be true in the same way at the same time. But because even just saying that uses words and rationality to explain it means that I can't actually argue that in a very effective way.
Right.
So therefore, there's no way to prove or disprove this or any single person's experience because it is all subjective. I will never get in your head. I will never be able to see the world through your eyes, through your experience, and feel it being as real as my world feels to me. And so therefore, we will always be at a distance, and yet your subjective reality and my subjective reality may not actually be that, they may be very different due to the details, but they might feel and function as realistically for both of us.
Which I feel is something that we have have a real life counterpart. It's why eyewitness accounts are so unreliable. Because it's your perspective of stuff. Right. And it's just like,
it's through your own filter, through your own lens. Yes,
and it feels so real to you. And you might not realize any type of slant or bias you're attaching to a situation or a specific gesture or tone to something, that you're attaching some more meaning than maybe is intended because it's from your perspective. And then that is your account of the situation, which makes it very subjective to you. But it might not be what actually happened.
Right. Or it might be, and the opposite might be true at the same time.
Exactly.
You just can't ever get out of sight of yourself to truly understand that those
right.
two things are.
It's a perfect situation of, I thought that person was being super snarky or whatever. So you perceive them as being super snarky, and they might not have meant to be super snarky, but they come across to everybody as super snarky, or they don't realize how snarky. Well, okay, that's just kind of boiled down to its element, but it's like, that's a situation of you perceive something, they don't intend it, but now it's not intended and it was perceived. Both of those are actually true.
Both have personal truths to the individuals.
Right.
Regardless of an objective view of it. And you can't ever get an objective view of somebody's intentions.
Intentions. That's right.
Like, they might say, this wasn't my intention. They might 100% believe it, but you can't ever vet that. And that's not my next point, is that there's no way to test this. There's no way to actually test if all truths can be real at the same time, or all versions of a myth are true at the same time. That's the nature of dragon breaks, right? Like, you can say, well, it seems like it happened, but you can't test it. Next point, if they're all somehow objectively true, meaning all creation stories and myths, then we're now stuck with trying to explain a huge list of inconsistencies. This soon degrades into complicated methods of justifications and goes against Occam's razor. So the idea here is, if you are going to say that every version of myth and every religious view of in whatever system, that they are all 100% compatible, they're all actually true in their own ways, but then you try to justify them with each other, you start to realize that there are still inconsistencies. Like, these things are not compatible. And there have been people throughout history who have attempted in our own world to justify why different religions all are actually pointing at the same reality, or all interpretations of this part of scripture actually work together to reinforce this fundamental theological view. that kind of thing. But oftentimes you end up creating a system that is way, way, way more complicated and jumps through all these hoops, these rational hoops to try to explain that. When in fact, Occam's razor, which is a philosophical concept that basically the simplest explanation is usually the most accurate. I mean, it goes against that. And it's not, that's not 100% true all of the time, but most of the time it is. So when you have to rely on a system that just becomes more and more complex in order to explain itself, it seems like you're heading in the wrong direction. Things should become simpler, not more complicated. And then the final point here is that there's very little evidence to believe that this is correct and goes against our natural experience of truth. That's why it fundamentally feels wrong to say all of these systems are true at the same time, is because our subjective experience of the world doesn't support that, even though our subjective experience of the world seems to tell me that this is the way reality works, when it might, your subjective experience might tell you opposite. But yet we both share the objective experience that both of those things don't feel like they can be true at the same time. So you've got this weird twist where subjectively it works, but also doesn't work simultaneously.
Right.
So, all right. So there you go. Those are all the different variations. Now, based on all of that, you can see that no one of these systems is a home run. Like I said before, none of these are as simple as saying like, well, okay, well, the first one seems most likely, so therefore one of these creation myths is true and the rest of them are false. You can't make that assumption. Like, this system, the reasoning for all of this is bogged down in so many details, so many assumptions, so many problems for each of them, that there's no one of these versions that actually, simply based on rationale itself, stands above any other. They all have their problems, but that also doesn't mean that one of them isn't more accurate than the others. It might be. So just that's kind of the whole point of this, is to say, before you even try to gauge which of these systems is true or not, realize the inability for our ability to just even make that determination. Like, we just don't have the tools to do that. And that applies to our own world. But it also can apply to a fictional world, like Lotus was saying, that was written by multiple people over multiple periods of time who have their own agendas, their own perspectives, all of those things. And so I always find it, I find it hilarious when I jump onto like the Elder Scrolls lore subreddit and somebody asks a question, and then you get one person who goes, definitively, this is the way this works, and this is how this works, and this is how this works, so confidently. And it's like, you don't know that. Every single time I'm just like, I don't respond on those threads because I don't need to get in a fight with people on the internet. But the assumption that, like, it's one thing to say like, okay, what is the name of one of the members of the tribunal? One of their names is Vivek. Okay, that is a fact. You can just look that up, right?
Right.
It's another thing to say, what did Vivek mean in sermon 14 of this thing when this happens, and how does that relate to this creation myth by this culture? And then you'd kind of force the two together and you go, well, this is really what it means for sure. You don't know that. It might probably mean that, but you don't know for sure. There's no way. There's unless you sat down with Todd Howard and said, hey, how do you take these two things and make them work together? And he says, well, actually, it works like this. Now you know for sure because you went to the source. Other than that, yes, because, you don't really
the
know.
Designer.
Because the designer told you. Right. But other than, and that doesn't mean that you can't play it. This is so multifaceted. That doesn't mean that you can't try to figure that out. That's great. We do that all the time on the show, right? Yes, we try to figure that out. That doesn't mean that you also can't say that this seems most likely to me. That's also great. You can do that. According to all my evidence, all my studies so far, this one seems most likely, or this rationale for how this works seems most likely. But to say definitively that this is how the lore works,
right?
Nobody has that information unless you already work at ZOS, and 10 years from now, that might actually change because the creators decide to go do something different. It's not like we're delving into a pot of gold that's been sitting there for 30 years and continue to pull out goodies and go, oh, look at this. No, we've got like a little cup with some gold coins in it from 30 years ago. But then other people added more stuff to it over time, and they will continue to do so. Is that a good analogy?
It's kind of weird. Makes sense to me.
But Okay, well, there you go. I'm getting off my horse here.
Analogies left and right, so I hope at least some of those landed and made sense for people.
Hopefully, yeah, I'm getting off my high horse. Just wanted to put all that out there. I don't want to dissuade. Do not get me wrong, and I'm sure people on the internet will get this wrong. I am not dissuading you from having lore conversations. I'm not dissuading you from speculating. I'm not dissuading you from pulling up evidence and looking at it and trying to compare them and trying to figure this out. Please do that. Just understand.
We do that all the time on the show. But
absolutely. Just understand the limitations. That's all I'm asking. Understand the limitations. So there you go.
Critical thinking is a lot of work, but it also leads to much more interesting discussions, I think, when it's accounted for.
Also, it allows me to enjoy, and I think you feel this way, Lotus, it allows us to enjoy the series regardless of how the lore changes over time.
Yeah, I tend to not get too bent out of shape when stuff either goes in a direction I think is really cool or not so cool.
Right. And usually it's more based on like, okay, back when I played Skyrim, this is my headcanon for the way things will work. And now that I've held on to it for a decade and a half, it's kind of congealed and grown into this thing. And then all of a sudden we get Elder Scrolls 6 and they present something differently. And I go, wait a minute. That conflicts with my previous views. I don't want that to be true because I've been holding on to this belief for so long. But guess what? You were wrong. Like, right, maybe you were right for the information that was available 15 years ago. But now that the authors decided to change it, it's just different now. You got to deal with it.
It's one of those things you, I always, you know, think that it's a selling point to a person's intellect when they can change their opinion based on getting more information. That should be something that is lauded, not like, did you change your opinion on this? Like, it's like, well, because I was presented more information, so yes. Like,
right.
I mean, just blindly ignore it to stick with what I used to think.
Exactly. People who are rational and actually seeking truth need to constantly try to prove themselves wrong.
Yes.
People generally fight against that.
Justify what you already think.
Our human inclination is to justify the things that we already believe. But that is the path to extremism. Because if you continue to justify the things you already believe, you will get further and further and further from the road signs along the way that say, hey, this thing's probably not true, because you start ignoring those. And then that's how people will veer off.
We have so many different, why everybody always jokes like, man, social media is just not like it used to be more fun. Yes, it did used to be more fun. Like, objectively for many, it was more fun because the algorithms hadn't been built into only feeding you a specific type of thing, whatever that thing may be, in any direction, whatever. But like, it bred these little echo chambers everywhere. And then people just either get fed something that they just keep, either this makes me super mad or so I keep interacting.
I want to believe this, so therefore I like it. So therefore I get more of this.
I like it. Like, you know, it's a weird side effect of social media that was not really accounted for originally. And now it's kind of like, it's been around long enough where it's just like, ooh, those are some side effects that we did not account for originally.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this wasn't meant to be like some sort of moral story or anything. It was more of just like this is the way that you can manage this information in a way to just kind of be more intellectually honest with the pursuit of truth.
Correct.
That was where this came from. But yeah, this does tangentially relate to that. Like, if you're not constantly trying to prove your theories wrong, that's the reason why science works the way it does. You come up with a theory or a hypothesis. It begins as a hypothesis, and then you try to break the hypothesis.
The goal is to prove something wrong. It is proven correct by being unable to prove it wrong.
Right.
That's the goal, to how to come up with like actual ways of how things work.
Right.
You eliminate all things that seem like they would be counter to it. Right. And if you can, then it's like, well, we now have a thing. Like, here we go.
Yep. So there you go. That's the way that stuff works. Well, this has been fun. We got to get to our...
I hope everybody enjoyed that.
This patron stuff.
A little off the rails. Based on what we've been doing, and we'll go back to more creation myths, but like at the same time, it's one of those situations where it's just like, this seemed like a fun tangent before we got too far away from a lot of these questions being asked, that I feel like was a good place to have a break and kind of do a weird, nerdy deep dive into this, because it's just like, hey, yeah, this is why we do this show, actually, for a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah. And it's why I try to take a different perspective on the lore than you get in a lot of places where, I mean, it's much easier to say, this is definitively what the lore says. But that's not always true.
Yeah, well, so. I tend to not follow those series quite as closely with the lore stuff. It's just less fun for me.
Yep. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to go thank our patrons and everybody else. So we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
All right, we're back, and we've got patrons to thank, but for some reason, my Patreon page has not been... Patreon's website is doing something weird. It will not load the list so I can see everybody. It's been like this for like the last...
We're having a similar problem on Tales, where we're like having trouble gathering information. I don't know if it's like a weird little hiccup they're dealing with or whatever, but we were running into some similar technical issues.
Yeah, so I guess it's been happening for a little while. But don't worry. If you signed up, you're still signed up. You'll get a shout out next week. You're not forgotten. And then thank you to everybody who signs up at the Daedric Prince tier. I don't have the list in front of me right now, but thank you, everybody who helps support us. And if you would like to support us and get ad-free episodes and t-shirts or stickers or join us for patron chats, we've got a patron chat coming up in, 2 weeks from now on the 31st. So if you'd like to do that, patreon.com/ElderScrollsLorecast is where you can do that. You can join us on the show. Talk about, we all vote together and then all the patrons decide what we're going to talk about every time. So come join us for that. Hopefully this thing fixes itself. What also hasn't fixed itself is the VoiceLine app that I was using for calls.
I know, I'm super bummed about that.
Still hasn't fixed itself. So I might have to find
that is alternate thing.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I think maybe they got bought out. I'm pulling it up again one more time just to double check. Login. Nope. There's no login with Google. It's just not here anymore. And now, and I can't put in a password because it didn't have a password because it logged in through my already logged in Google account. So cool. So that doesn't happen anymore. What else is happening? Well, if you'd like to leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it out on a future episode. Leave us a 5-star review. We'll read that out if we can see it here in the US. If we can't see it, thank you still for doing that. Leaving a review or a comment anywhere absolutely is helpful. So thank you for taking the time to do that. And I've got a random page up, Lotus. But before we do the random page, you got anything going on that you want to share before we head out?
So we should be having an episode of Tales of Tamriel presented by the unofficial Elder Scrolls Pages, my other podcast that I do this weekend. We've been on kind of like a bi-weekly schedule, but we've had a little bit of traversal, so to speak. Ark was actually over at the ESO Tavern in Germany, so he's got lots of fun stories from that. I guess it was a great time. I always wanted to go to the Germany one. I've been to some of the other ESO taverns and stuff like that, so he'll have stories from that. We also have, rather than have a gut reaction to everything that happened with the ZOS and Bethesda and Microsoft in general layoffs, we almost had an episode literally right after that happened, but before the ESO Tavern, we decided to sit on it a little bit, let some information come out about it so that we could have a more detailed opinion on the situation as opposed to just like, this sucks and now irritated, which granted, that sucks and I'm still super irritated for everybody that had that happen to them. But I just wanted to be able to like provide a little like objective detail to the situation. So we'll be covering that if that's something you're interested in. A lot of news stuff. PTS has been out on the Elder Scrolls Online, so we'll be discussing that as well. So this episode of Tales we'll be recording this week should be an interesting one, and probably if you like longer formats, we'll be at it for a while like we tend to do over there.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And the changes have been interesting to track. There's the whole, I don't know. So I won't get into it here, but some of the ESO changes, especially with the being able to use any skills. Some people love it. Some people hate it. But
and then it's changing already, which is another big topic of debate, which I will say that I'm reserving my opinion until it goes live. But I am A lot of the changes are a little concerning to me as well, because I've actually been talking about, I love the new scribing system that was added, where it's just like, so you've got scribing and you've got subclassing, which really to me made it feel like a full, like this was one of the things missing from Elder Scrolls Online, that I made it feel a little different than a standard Elder Scrolls game where you can kind of just be a jack of all trades, you can do whatever you want.
Right.
I loved that, what that added, but then it kind of came with some side effects of being like, people are just completely over the top powerful and stuff. And I'm like, that's great. Some people don't think that's so great. So.
Yeah. Well, it is a multiplayer game that has to have some balance to it. So.
Right. So it's, you know, topic of discussion.
Yeah. There's also a big patch that came out for the Oblivion remaster. I think it was like yesterday. So supposedly higher frame rates and a lot of the bugs were fixed and they've been continuing to work on that. So that's good news. Although a lot of people at the studio just got laid off because of the Microsoft stuff. That sucks. So all sorts of news, and I'm sure you guys are going to cover all that on Tales of Tamriel, so go check that out. From my side, I am heading to GCX in just almost a week. It is Thursday night as we record this. I will be there on the 25th, which is not tomorrow Friday, but the week after Friday. And so if you are going to be in Orlando for GCX, let me know. Jump on the Discord. I'll put a little channel on there where we can all discuss what's going on. We'll probably meet up for lunch or something while I'm over there. I'm also going to have the opportunity to interview some very interesting people who have worked on Elder Scrolls and Fallout and some other things. So that stuff will be coming. It will probably be streamed live from the actual event. So check Robots Radio on Twitch for the live stream on the 25th, probably in the afternoon. But if you missed that live, don't worry about it, because I'm going to take whatever makes sense and I'm going to put that up on this feed, so you'll be able to get the interviews with some of these very cool people who have worked on the games, voice actors, that kind of stuff. So that stuff's coming and I'm super excited about it. And other than that, Fallout and Elder Scrolls and Lord of the Rings are my podcast. The Robots Radio Network is the network. I've got a bunch of new people who have joined up for the Rocket Club recently, which is so cool because all these creators have these cool new ideas. So lots of new shows are coming. I'm working on a website revamp. There's all sorts of cool stuff going on at Robots Radio and lots of other shows for you to check out. So definitely check out that stuff. But Lotus, it's the end of the show and I've got a random page. Are you ready?
Oh boy. Let's randomize it up.
Oh, Hercene's going to be in Orlando. Very cool. Yeah, dude.
That's awesome.
Let's make sure we meet up. This is going to be super fun.
I got to see Hercene's amazing cosplay when we were in Amsterdam.
Oh, dude, are you going to be in cosplay the whole time? Because there is cosplay at the event. That's awesome. All right, so here we go. Random page. This is from Elder Scrolls Online. People. You ready? Why do we get people? We get people a lot. I guess there's a lot of people.
A lot.
This comes up a lot.
I mean, there's a lot of people. I'm pretty sure the series has like several records for like the most NPCs.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, at this point, there's a ton. But here we go. Red Sun Brigand. Red Sun Brigands are orc ravagers of the Red Sun Bandits. So here's the details.
All right.
Location, Riemann's Bluff. Race, orc. Gender, varies. Health, 31,364. Reaction, hostile or neutral, depending. Class, Ravager. Factions, Red Sun Bandits. And then there's other variations. I guess there's some dead ones that show up because the location, Riemann's Bluff. Race, orc. Gender, varies. Health, zero, dead.
Beautiful.
So there's a variation. There's a variation where they're already dead and somebody has made a point to track that on the UESP. This is why the UESP is the best source for Elder Scrolls wiki type stuff.
All the mix of incredibly useful information in series and the pinnacle of also useless information.
It's so good. Yeah, and the picture here of just like dude laying on the ground dead.
Just laying there.
Just laying there. Just dead guy. There's a few other details.
He was just napping with zero health. Everybody just thought he was dead.
Right. He just likes to lay in the middle of the street.
Yeah, just hanging out. I mean, being very, very still.
I mean, that's his reality, so who am I to guess? I don't know why he's doing it, but he has a good reason. All right. Well, I'm not going to go into the other details. It's like their abilities, Quick Strike, Uppercut, Cleave, all the details around that stuff.
Which is funny because those are all abilities that you can get, which is one of the things that's so neat. And one of the things that we kind of got a little bit of a... Hey, I wonder what back before, you know, getting new classes was a common thing in Elder Scrolls Online. At the start, it was kind of like, hey, the NPCs can do this. we can't do this. And when a new class was discussed, it was like, well, do we get, oh, we've got the thing that they now have. Like, I see. So sometimes they telegraph some of the things that are coming by doing these.
Nice. Like the NPCs can do it. And then all of a sudden the new class does it.
And then suddenly we can do it. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
All right. So they designed it for both. We just didn't know yet. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So there you go. That's our random page. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in again to this episode. And we will be back next time. And especially hello to our YouTube audience who continues to tune in. Thank you for being here. And I hope this wasn't too weird and off to the side.
Yeah, no, I hope this was at least entertaining for being not off topic, but tangentially related to a topic.
Yeah, I hope it's helpful in people understanding how to approach the lore, even if it just means that people are more skeptical. That's probably a good thing. So there you go. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And until next time, well, if somebody tells you that this is the way reality works, look at them and go, all right, buddy, how do you know? For real?
You need to be as snarky and neckbeardy as that just was.
Be as snarky and neckbeardy as you can. People need to be put more on, like, when somebody says, hey, I think this, people need to question stuff more often, right? Like, we all just be like, okay, cool.
Yeah, and actually question it. Not question.
Don't be a jerk.
People.
But have a real conversation. Like, that's what I'm getting at. Like, have... Yeah. Anyway, I'm getting back on my soapbox, but I got to get off the soapbox and, do other things. So thank you for being here, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games, lore, stories, community. Just press play.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. Happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.